everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, Happy New Year. Good to be back.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, John. And Happy New Year to you, Shireen Gorbani, on the left.
Hello. And hey, listeners, I hope you had a good holiday season. I know we've got a few holidays kind of still trickling out here, but Happy New Year. Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah. And 4 days into the new year, we have, in dramatic fashion, our President Trump, our government, in an amazing operation. I mean, really, the details and the mechanics of it. Goes in and lifts out of a foreign country a leader. I was just...
Or at least an alleged leader, but yeah.
Yeah. I was just... So my internet was out all weekend, I wasn't able to...
Lucky
me. A couple people said that.
I was dark.
I was dark, but my goodness. There's a lot of... Let's unpack this.
Yeah. So internet being out, was your TV still working? Or was that out too?
Oh, yeah, it was out.
Okay.
Yeah, it was out. But I was able to use a hotspot and capture some things. And I want to I want to unpack this in a way of just saying first reactions, both of you.
Yeah. I actually think this is going to be an episode where you hear maybe quite a bit of agreement around our shared concerns here. My first reactions are, if this were about the people of Venezuela, I think I would feel really differently. I think that regime change is deeply problematic. I think that it tends to be violent and leave a bloody stain on our engagement in this kind of interactions. And I am stunned that we have not learned anything from
What did they already get? Didn't they already, wasn't it 40 deaths?
Yeah.
Something like that. None of ours.
On the Venezuelan side.
Yeah. First reaction, John.
I think there's no love lost for Maduro being gone and
100%.
Out of power. I think we all agree on that.
Yeah.
His horrendous reign of terror in Venezuela and the destruction of the economy out there and the human suffering, I think that's something that we can all appreciate. I find it interesting, 2 years ago when I ran for Congress, a lot of what I heard on the Republican side was, we're so sick and tired of this nation building, mm-hmm. and we want peace, and then you see something like this and you scratch your head and go, well, this looks a lot like nation building and so forth. What are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
And it has been, you know, since 89 when we swooped into Panama and took out Noriega.
On the same day, January 3rd, 1990.
Oh, was it the same day? Didn't do that homework. But it's one of those things. It's like, okay, what are the long-term ramifications? And I'm not convinced we really have a good plan of how we're, quote unquote, running Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. Natalie, how about you?
You know, my first reaction was, you got to be kidding me. I was like, really? I mean, I was just filled with how risky this is. Now, I worked in Washington as a political appointee at the side of a cabinet secretary when President George W. Bush went into Iraq. And I remember, you know, what that felt like.
Yeah.
Our principal, as they say, going to the White House, getting the news, coming back, letting us know, you know, what our role would be and whatnot. And I was filled with all this optimism of what could happen. And then, of course, the long tail of it didn't feel very good.
Yeah.
So, I had that reaction. What do you guys think of what they call the Monroe Doctrine?
Yeah.
Did you hear that term, John?
Yeah.
The Monroe Doctrine.
The Monroe Doctrine renamed after Donald Trump.
Best to give us a little bit of background on.
Yeah, America's right to dominate the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah. President Monroe talked about the importance of American influence, U.S. influence in the Western Hemisphere, and we're not going to allow other countries to play games over here. Clearly, Donald Trump seems to be taking this even further. Now, some of this may be a way to take an indirect shot at China, Russia, clearly Cuba, but it also sends a troubling, you know, precedence. I mean, it's kind of doubling down of, okay, when is it okay for a foreign country to swoop in and to, you know, whether it's a law enforcement activity, a military activity, mm-hmm. something else, pluck their ruler, their leader, whoever it might be, out, and when is that okay and when is that not okay? And for the U.S., is when is that appropriate per the Constitution? When is that appropriate in terms of what other ramifications will that cause? To what extent will people be trusting of the U.S. activities? To what extent will they question it? If this was truly about relieving the suffering in Venezuela, I think we'd see a different response than some of the other things when people have talked about this being about oil or, you know, the economy or other things like that, and the U.S. is going to play a very heavy-handed role in it, that's where a lot of folks are going to say, well so when is this appropriate and when is it not?
150 planes, 20 military bases.
Yeah.
It was a cyber attack on the power. airstrikes, special operations, a Delta Force Army unit.
And our military was very skilled.
Incredibly skilled.
And this cost us billions, probably, to execute. When we think about the budget for special forces, we're talking about major American dollars. I think the frustration I have here is like adding this to $20 billion to Argentina, was it? Adding this to bombing Iran, adding this to threats against Cuba, yeah. Greenland, other places. Like, we are in a new world with no rules.
Yeah. What do you understand, Shireen, to be the justification for it? And I'll ask John the same thing. Like, my son was asking me that, and I had to kind of scratch my head because it's like, is it oil? Is it, you know, what are the U.S. interests we're protecting here?
Yeah. All about the drugs.
Yeah. So first it was about drugs, which turned out to be a ruse, right? There are not, the way that they're talking about fentanyl coming out of that country was not correct.
And they had to walk it back and say cocaine.
Cocaine. Now they're saying cocaine. Now they're saying that he's been charged as a narco drug trafficker. But just to be clear, what is happening is that our president can have his DOJ file charges against whoever they want and under whatever they want. And we are accepting that. I mean, I think we're not accepting it, I should say. I feel like we three around the table are not accepting this.
About whether it's, you know, legal or constitutional. But clearly the precedent set with Panama says
it's been happening before.
The courts will allow it to happen because they defer to the president, and we have a history of this.
Right. But we didn't go to the UN on the behalf of the people of Venezuela. And I would love to take a second, maybe in a moment, to talk about what's been happening in Venezuela, but specifically with the opposition. But I guess this is about oil now.
John, what do you understand the rationale to be?
Well,
especially at this level. I mean, to involve that much firepower.
So the argument was he was a narco-terrorist. There'd been charges brought against him, both I think in 2000 as well as just recently. And so it was a law enforcement activity to go in and take him and bring him to justice to a court in New York City. And so that was the justification. Now, clearly, there's lots of other stuff swirling around as a result of that. Some of the charges weren't really about narco-terrorism, but they're about other things that you look and go, well, how does that apply when it comes to the U.S. if you're doing that in a foreign country? That wouldn't seem to violate U.S. law. But that was the excuse. Now, is that going to be the only reason for it? No, I don't think so. And that's where, unfortunately, this may have longer ramifications against the U.S. As folks say, they don't really trust what we say and what we do.
Yeah.
Because if we were plucking out a leader for oil or something else like that, regime change or where you want to control the country, other folks are going to be much more skeptical. Mm-hmm. Our European, you know, allies and so forth. Of course, there's a lot of questions to, you know, what is the benefit of allies these days? And and our president doesn't really seem to believe in, I get there's challenges when you have allies, but I almost get the sense he doesn't really think that allies matter that much.
Mm-hmm. I just think that the question that I'm left with is, are we just going to start bombing countries because Trump doesn't like their leader?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it feels like.
Mm. So let's talk about the risk-reward here.
This is the uncertainty of Trump.
Yeah, what's the risk-reward here? I think the risks are super high. You know, that American servicemen lose their lives, and that didn't happen in this first wave. That
injuries, but no deaths.
You get into nation building and you have, you know, that old foreign policy adage that if you break it, you keep it. Yeah. You know, and so now you've got that. The lack of moral leadership that makes it China feel like they can go into Taiwan.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Russia's using this.
Those are all the risks.
Similar justification for what they're doing in Ukraine.
Yeah. These are all sort of the risks. And the reward, I'm thinking, can we as an American people define the reward? Like, is something going to change with oil prices? Is something going to change with the drugs that we see on the streets? Is there a reward to us?
When you talk about oil and the desire for China and Russia to have Venezuelan oil, yes, there could be some security benefits as a result of us having, I'm going to say, more influence over where that oil goes. Mm-hmm. But Trump is very unpredictable. I mean, folks say, well, he telegraphed it. It's like, well, he telegraphs lots of things that are even conflicting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, I look back and, with the bombing that took place in Iran, and you thought, there's likely going to be more to follow up. And then there hasn't been. Now, the mm-hmm. question will be, how long will we go? I know he's rattling sabers and threatening again.
Yeah.
But this is where, okay, one and done and out is different than, okay, are we going to get into this slog for years or, you know, longer as a result?
I just want to quickly lift up the work of the opposition in Venezuela that has been doing incredible, I would say, efforts to hold on to a sense of democracy. Maduro did not win the last election. The reason that we know that is because the opposition was incredibly organized, collected all of the ballots across the country, was able to determine that he was not the rightful winner of that election. He assumed power anyway. I think, again, is just repeating what you said, we agree that Maduro was a horrendous leader. We would say the same thing about Saddam Hussein. We would say the same thing about, I think we could say the same thing about a number of places around the world. The question is, what allows us to do this? Is this correct? I think it's incorrect. I don't believe our Constitution supports this. Congress should have a role in this. And frankly, what we're seeing is continued cowardice and deflection around Congress's responsibility to lead us into war. And so what we have is an autocratic strongman who's just deciding what we're going to do.
So let's take a short break and then come back and talk about the local reaction to this and what it might mean for Utah. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Sure. Okay, Natalie Gochner with John Dougal and Shereen Gourbani. Stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We'd love to hear from our listeners like you. If you'd like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shereen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. We've been talking about this crazy situation with Venezuela, and we want to just develop it a little bit more, talk about how the local reaction and just a historical reminder. What happened, well, John, in Panama?
So in Panama, they came in, the U.S. came in, we took out Noriega, captured him, brought him back here, you know, and he spent the rest of his life in prison. But the day we took him out was the day that a new president was sworn in Panama. So there was no lapse in governance there, unlike here, where we have now the vice president of the ruling regime is now in place. You know, is that going to bode well? The other thing I would just remind folks is, and this is where I see so many folks conflicted, from a U.S. perspective, I tell folks we need to do the right things in the right way. Yeah. We can accomplish the right things the wrong way. And given our Constitution, our statutes, and everything else like that, we need to make sure we're doing the right things the right way to be, as Reagan said, that shining city on a hill, being an example to all other countries. My fear is we're now giving the excuse to Russia and China to be more aggressive.
Yeah.
We're going to be aggressive. You guys go ahead and be aggressive too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it really changes the global stage when we think about what kinds of actions are justified. It is not beyond, you know, reason. I very much agree with you, John, that we'll see Putin using similar arguments for what he's doing when he's advancing his own nation building. Thinking about what China might do in response to Taiwan or other places is really concerning. And this absolutely just says, we don't care. We used to, I mean, even Panama, for example, had greater global, we were in concert with allies when that happened, though I think it was still bad and wrong. We had people standing with us in some of that decision-making. That is not the case here. Not even the, I would say, theater maybe of going to the UN. None of that happened. He just acts on his own.
Yeah. And going to local reaction, I mean, Senator Lee is one of those right out of the chute, you know, he was talking about it's a little too soon to know whether this was unconstitutional or not. But clearly he recognized this could be right on the bounds of unconstitutional or concerning in terms of how it took place.
Yeah. So we're recording this on Monday. Some things are going to happen before this airs, but the Senate will look at requiring this administration to go to Congress before there is any further military action. Just a question of whether that would pass. I think Senator Kaine is the one pushing that. That'll be interesting to see if Congress, you know, asserts more power.
Right, right. Well, and technically, certain actions have to be reported to at least a certain set of leadership in the Congress as military action or before military action takes place or within a certain period of time. The Trump administration is trying to say this was not military action. This was law enforcement action supported by the military, and therefore those rules don't apply. So you're getting a nuance of what that means.
Yeah.
What has the local reaction been that you all have seen? I mean, I noted what Senator Lee did early on, you know, putting out on X that what's the constitutional justification for this? And within 2 hours, he'd found it after a conversation with Secretary Rubio.
Yeah.
I think generally it's been supportive. And this is where I say it gets into that conflict. We all agree Maduro was a bad person.
Yeah.
And getting him out of Venezuela was likely going to be good in the long run. But
is that the role of the United States military? Is that the role of the United States? Yeah, should we be doing that?
But I think most of the reaction is, well, that's good. So therefore, by definition, it's all good.
Yeah. I will say just at the local level, I think folks that especially may have deeper ties to, you know, Latin America, South America, folks that have family members or may themselves be Venezuelan certainly can speak to
refugees that are here from asylum, seeking asylum here.
The amount of pain that has been caused in that country, the amount of violence and just economic strife that has led to mass migration is painful and is very real. And so I think there is this tension for folks to say, I see this, I'm having a hard time understanding the justification for this, but also hope for a better day for Venezuelans. Like, I think that that tension is very real.
I want to set this question up by sharing something that once happened in my little political experience. But I was at the, you know, monthly news conference of Governor Leavitt, and he was live fire taking reporters' questions, and he was complaining about the legislature, and he said something like, it's hard to steer a state with 104 hands on the steering wheel. And of course, that's a, you know, representation of the legislature, 104 members. And the minute he said it, I was just like, uh-oh, we're going to pay a price for that one. You know, I better be ready for that one. So
it's because the governor doesn't have his hands on the steering wheel. He gets to point out the windshield and gets to put his foot on the brake.
Well, it happened to me again when I heard President Trump say, when they were asking him about what's next, he said, we're going to run Venezuela. And I was like, oh, his staff didn't want him to say that.
Yep.
And then you noted that right after Secretary Rubio was saying, well, we're going to run policy and we're going to run the transition, but we're not going to run Venezuela, to which I said, it's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
If you're running the transition, if you're running policy, you're running the country.
There is no plan. It's just whatever he comes up with in the moment.
And this will be, you know, as we see it play out over the next weeks and months, you know, this strategic, very successful military operation, and then what happens afterwards?
Yeah.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, there was a lot of, you know, George W. Bush, a lot of success when he went into Afghanistan and other places like that, that then turned into the slog, the long tail you talked about.
Yeah.
That caused so many Americans to say, okay, we hate war and we never want to get in it again.
I just can't stop thinking about the George W. Bush mission accomplished on the, do you remember that banner?
Yeah. That's another one where you kind of go, oh, I don't know if we should have done that.
Yeah, right? I just kept thinking.
He's in a fighter pilot outfit and gets out of the aircraft carrier. And
especially when you think about, I mean, now, obviously, we have hindsight, but the amount of American lives that were lost, the amount of deep pain and thousands of lives lost in the Middle East. But I guess I just have to say that there is this... I have to question if we are going to get to a point where this breaks apart. Like, how in any way is this America first? Like, what is going on? And trying to understand if, like, I guess true MAGA, whatever, has any real power, what are they going to do? Because what I see is the only real power is that they can all figure out a way to genuflect to Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I can say you can see this America first as the Western Hemisphere gets more aligned with the U.S. and there's more peace, this can clearly be America first. But if it's causing it to fracture even more and to cause Iran, China, Russia to play more in the Western Hemisphere, it gets much more concerning and identifies not America first.
I noted that just like in the Ukraine, how people start talking about Poland or your place, where's the place you were the Peace Corps?
Moldova.
They start talking about that after this kind of thing.
Yep.
All of a sudden, they start talking about Colombia.
Yeah.
You know, Venezuela, then Colombia. And it's kind of
Cuba,
scary.
Yeah, et cetera.
Hey, Mexico
even.
I tend to think these things through the eyes of an economist. And we know that Venezuela has some of the largest oil reserves in the world. So that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
We know that that's a geopolitical issue. But my understanding is that...
And the companies with the oil... were taken a couple decades
left
ago.
Left a long time ago. And
nationalized.
My understanding that to get that oil back up into a productive, you know, economic kind of equation will take billions of dollars and a lot of time.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, that's your understanding. And so, and then oil prices aren't that high.
Yeah.
So it's there's like a lot of oil out there.
There's a lot of oil out there right now.
And so I'm trying to figure out, again, the risk reward for this administration to do this.
Yeah.
But listen, let's give our president credit for the fact that he did something in your legacy country.
Okay.
And it seemed to work.
Are we talking about Iran? What
yes.
are we talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, go on.
Well, sure, he didn't like that.
It's not going great. But
well, there's a knock because I'm just sort of like, that was a
protests.
Risk. And look what he did.
There are historic protests happening right now because of the, again, the economy, economic strife. And I just have to say, like, what is it going to take for us to come to that? People are seeing their healthcare costs explode right now as they're out on the marketplace. People are saying that they are less well off now than they were, you know, a year ago. The kind of economic fallout that we're seeing that's driving these protests, I do think could come to our own doorstep, right? Yes, but there has been, there was an intervention, a bombing, I would say questionable in Iran, but now I am inspired by the protests that are happening there, but that has nothing to do with our president.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if you want to say anything more, John. I want to bring up one other issue related to this, and then we'll go on to the new year, but the Epstein files. Some people have thrown out there, this is very, you know, in the strategic undercurrent, that this kind of world event, news event is done to draw attention away from the Epstein files. Anything there?
This goes back to Bill Clinton and the Monica Lewinsky and the bombing that took place there to, quote unquote, distract from.
Remind
from
our listeners a little bit more of what that was.
I don't remember which country, but. The Lewinsky scandal was coming up in the news, and then all of a sudden we're bombing for national security reasons somewhere in the Middle East.
Yep.
And therefore, okay. You know, it was claimed that it was for security reasons, and others said it was to distract the news cycle. But there's been allegations of this kind of thing for decades that, you know, you want to change the topic, you want to change the attention, do something. And
interesting. Anything you want to say there, Shireen?
Mm. Isn't that wag the dog, right?
Like wag the dog. Yeah.
Yep. I think we're seeing that.
All right. Well, we got a new year. We got about 3 minutes or so left in the program. I wanted to ask both of you, what are your traditions? What are your practices as you go into a new year? I'm a big New Year's person.
Okay. I love this. But just before we jump in, I hope that listeners will give us a little grace of pre-recording a bunch of episodes. But we hope you enjoyed them. And so we'd love to hear from you. I hope that in this new year, we're able to respond to questions that you have, and you sent some really good ideas, and I think that we're going to try to incorporate those as well. So thank you for your feedback. Thank you for being with us. And I guess I would say I'm with you. I really do think about the new year as like kind of a fresh start, a restart. Not so much on things like, I don't know, lifting weights. Like 1 year I said I was going to, actually I do lift weights, but 1 year I said I was going to not eat nachos at home.
You know, good,
something
good,
like
yeah.
that. But I think for me, more time reading, more time with people. Mm-hmm. I really have loved, I would say, just like finding ways to sustain community. And I think in these times it feels so difficult and full of strife. It's really nice to be with the people I love and communities that I love.
Very nice. Beautiful. John, what is your New Year's practice?
I'm not really a New Year's resolution kind of guy.
Okay.
But it's more one of those things of, okay, trying to find new challenges. And that doesn't mean January 1st. Okay. It may be, you know, middle of the year. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try and tackle it. You know, went back to law school. It's not something that somebody normally does and just for fun. But you know, it's mid-year, 1 year. It's like, okay, it's time to go get this done. And
nice.
It was a 3 to 4 year endeavor, but it's one of those things. It's just looking to say, okay, what new mountain do I want to climb? What new challenge do I want to tackle? You know,
do you have some on the horizon or just like big picture things, themes?
I'm going to say one of the things I'm looking to do is I haven't really played the piano or music since I was 12. So I'm looking to maybe try and relearn
it.
That.
I love it. You're going to read more. You're going to play the piano. What am I going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I have this practice of picking a word that, you know, some people do resolutions, but I pick a word that I'm focused on. A few years ago, my word was energy. Not bad. Another,
was that oil, solar, what kind
of
energy?
No, it was like
all the above.
Motivating myself. Another one I had the year before was listen. I wanted to become a better listener. And last year it was actually bless. I just, a verb, I wanted to lift people. This year I'm picking heal.
Okay.
Yeah, just I feel the need for more healing in this world.
Yeah, I think
so. That's the
Natalie
word I've
Gochner,
picked.
Medicine woman.
Medicine woman.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe if we invite folks to think about joining in that.
Yeah,
I would just really invite people to find ways to continue to have conversations with folks with whom they may find disagreement. It's one of the most valuable parts of sitting with you week after week.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. I feel like it enriches my life, and I'm grateful for our friendships.
Yeah, ditto.
Likewise.
Dignified
Likewise.
Disagreement on both sides of the aisle. Hey, the program is produced by Anthony Scoma. We're so glad you're with us today.